cheese jamboree going on at your grocer's right now.
Hey, come on.
Swiss Colby American. A sandwich sure to please. America loves pizza with real mozzarella cheese.
Make your meal sing with a dairy goodness of real cheese. Sponsored by the American Dairy Association.
For the ABC Information Network, I'm Kate Dorton. Good morning, friends, and welcome to KFAR Radio's Meet a Pioneer. Today is October 12, 1984. You're listening to Paul Rosenthal's Bravura Variations on Alaska's Flag Song. I'm Gail Malloy. Each Friday morning at 9, we'll meet a pioneer. This morning's presentation is brought to you by the Two Rivers Lodge, the Riverboat Discovery, Sophie Station, the Denali Chiropractic Clinic, the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, Interior Signs, and Larson's Jewelers. We'll spend the next hour with Mr. James Savage and Dr. Raymond Evans. Was Count Basie, Mr. Roberts Roos. Well, good morning, everyone. It is time now to meet our pioneers. This morning on our program, heard once a week at this time, Jim Savage is best known for his work as the head of the public health in Fairbanks and this area of Alaska and the territories. And Dr. Ray Evans is a medical doctor and was medical examiner for the state of Alaska from 1962 to 1972. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
You're both going to have to fight over our one microphone this morning, but I think we'll work it out okay. I will start with Mr. Jim Savage. You know, you came here in March of 1940, but what I would like you to tell our listeners is what came before that and what prompted you to come up to Alaska at that time? Where did it all start from?
Well, I think perhaps that I came to Alaska for the same reason many people are now coming to Alaska. I was hunting for a job. There was quite a depression and very little work in the States when I came up here, and I came from New England, and the family had been in New England for hundreds of years, and I think it was time for somebody to leave that section. In 1932, I had ridden freights and hitchhiked across the country to Los Angeles to see the Olympics, and I got a taste of the other country outside of New England. So after I got out of college, I decided to go back to California, and from there I came to Alaska.
I noticed you brought one other thing with you from New England, your accent.
Back the car.
Well, tell me what happened. You were in Hollywood working for a while before you came up here.
Well, I left college with no money, and I again rode freights and hitchhiked to California and had to eat, so I got a job in a Hollywood restaurant where the movie stars ate, and so then I ate with them.
What movie stars?
Oh, there was, it's hard to remember now, Lucille Ball was there, I remember, as a young girl, and Stuart Irwin, June Collier. It's been a long time, I had to remember.
What were you doing at the restaurant? What was your
job? I was washing dishes.
Oh, my.
I washed dishes throughout life. I washed dishes through prep school, college, and to Alaska.
How much did you make, by the way, as a dishwasher back in the 30s?
I was the highest paid dishwasher in L.A., they tell me. I was getting $17 a week, 7 days a week, 17 hours a day.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what did you get your degree in before this all started?
Microbiology.
Uh-huh. Well, from there, then what happened?
Well, as soon as I got enough money to pay the $40 steerage to Seward and the $28 railroad fare to Fairbanks, I left and started to Alaska.
And you arrived here in March of 1940?
Yes.
And how old were you at the time?
Oh, boy, that's a long time ago. 26 or 27, I believe, by then.
Okay, now why did you pick Fairbanks?
Well, probably because it was as far away from that old farm I worked on all my life as I could get.
Now, you had a friend here from back home.
Yes, that's right. Nat Gerson was going to university up here, and he came from my hometown back in New England. I think he was trying to get away from the farm, too.
Okay, well, once you got here, then what did you do? I mean, March is winter, and I understand that was a cold year.
Yes, of course, when you come in the steerage, you meet all kinds of people, and so we had quite a group of friends that came, and we pitched a lean-to by the old railroad roundhouse, and we slept there. None of us had any money, and it's about where the industrial area is now, I believe, and One of the boys had a gun, and we'd start the campfire, and when we'd hear a shot, we'd put the frying pan on because we knew he had a rabbit. And then we finally got jobs.
Huh. What jobs? What did you do?
Well, the first job I had was peeling poles for a contract on tripod poles for the railroad to carry their electric wires on, or telephone wires, I forget which. And then, of course, I went to work at Ladd Field, Fort Wainwright, helping build that. I was a boiler on the gravel wash at Ladd Field.
Before we move on, what did Fairbanks look like? What was it like? What was the personality when you arrived here in 1940?
Well, the first thing I remember when I came into town is they were paving the street before the federal building. That was the only pavement in Fairbanks at the time. And after you'd been here a short time, you knew everybody in town. And it was nice. It was a small town. 12th Avenue was the city line, I believe. It was nice. All the old-timers, and I don't consider myself too much of an old-timer, but all the old-timers look back with fondness for the good old Fairbanks when you knew everybody. And there were no worries. You could always get credit. It was nice. What can I say?
How long did it take you to realize that you wanted to stay here forever?
It wasn't long. I can't say that. I was here that summer, and then in that winter I went out and cut wood. Then I came back to Ladd Field. Then they transferred me to the Yakutat Field. And so I was only here about 2 years. And then the Army came. I was in the Army. And I still wanted to come back as soon as I got out, and I did. So it didn't take long.
You know, you got your degree in microbiology, but boy, it sounds like you did everything else in the world when you got to Fairbanks.
Well, you did what you could for a job.
You were a carpenter.
Yes, I worked at it. I helped build a lot of houses.
You also, I understand, did you work on the Fairbanks Inn at one time or another? Or?
Oh, I remember Chuck West and Phil Johnson were starting a travel bureau business, and they wanted to have a hotel, and so they had bought a lot of those Army tents, and so we pitched a bunch of Army tents up there where the Fairbanks Hotel is now, put wooden floors down and built a utility house, and he put the tourists in those tents. They seemed to like and enjoy it. I guess Fairbanks atmosphere to them. But now, of course, it's quite a modern hotel there, but that's the way it started.
I mean, the people paid their hotel fee, and it was a tent?
With no objections. I talked to a lot of them. They were happy in those tents. Huh. And the road out in front, Cushman Street, then was a mud hole in the spring. Yeah, they seemed to like it. I sit in the hotel there now drinking coffee and think, gosh, it's been a long time and long ways, but that's the way Fairbanks has gone.
I'm speaking with Mr. Jim Savage, and we're leading up to the point where he got back involved in the area that he got his degree in, the health field. First, Jim, tell us, the war years, World War II years, how did you get involved in that, and you met your wife during that time? Tell us that story.
Well, I left in, I believe, in November or December to go back on leave to visit the folks. And in the old days, everybody came to Alaska in steerage and went out first class. So I went out first class and visited back in New England. When I was there, Pearl Harbor was bombed and the war came on. So I enlisted and spent 4 years overseas in the Army. And, of course, this was my chance to get back in my field. So I enlisted in the medical corps and ran a health laboratory, a medical laboratory in the Army in a field hospital during the war. And you wanted to... Well, we was first stationed in England, Africa, southern France, and I was in Dijon. And the colonel was worried that my lab men, who were all college graduates, would be appointed officers, so he went to a local medical school and hired a girl there to come in case we were suddenly called out as officers. And she's now my wife.
And that's Suzanne Cooper is her maiden name.
Yes.
And you were married here in Fairbanks?
Yes.
You sent for her?
Yes.
And where were you married? Who married you?
Father McDonald, I believe it was, married us in the, as I say, the woodshed of the old church. But it was over there on the river. And as we were not too well known, the good father ran out on the sidewalk and stopped the first two people that came along to act as witnesses for us.
Oh, my. Oh, my goodness. Well, what kind of a home had you made for your new wife?
Oh, boy. We lived in a Wanigan, and we lived there for a year or so.
What's a Wanigan?
Well, it's a portable house, I guess. It's a small shack. We call them shacks back home, but up here we call them Wanigans. It's a house theoretically can easily be moved. It sits on posts and or on anything on the ground. And we lived there for a while. And then later I built my own house where I live now.
And where is that?
That's on 8th Avenue. I built a log house there, which we now lived in, have lived for since 1950.
Oh, my goodness. Huh. Well, 1950, I think, was just about a turning point in your life when you got into the health field. And before we proceed with this story, I'm going to take a break at this time to acknowledge a couple of our sponsors, the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop and Sophie's Station. You're listening to Meet a Pioneer on KFAR Radio. We'll be back in a minute.
Today's Alaskans are demanding more. More style, more options, more flexibility, and more for their money. And they're finally getting it from Sophie's Station, Fairbanks' newest, most attractive contemporary living complex. Sophie's Station is a prestigious addition to our community, designed for optimum quality, comfort, and convenience. For adult living at its best, see the new one- and two-bedroom units, now available at Sophie's Station.
Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop. Sam and Jane McConkie believe beautiful things are timeless, and everything you find at the Forget-Me-Not Shop is beautiful. Fine linens, silver, crystal, decorator items for your home or office, and that little something for special friends. Forget-Me-Not adds a feeling of luxury to even the most practical items. So, for beautiful things for years to come, for your friends, your home, or for yourself, remember the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, open 10 to 6, 6 days a week in Northgate Square. Good morning and welcome back to Meet a Pioneer. I'm Gail Malloy and I'm talking with Mr. Jim Savage, and soon we'll hear a little bit, we'll hear from Dr. Ray Evans also. Well, we left our story, it was about 1950, and Jim, you indicated to me when we talked earlier, that was at the point where the carpenter days and the working on the railroad days were behind you, and what happened next?
Well, in 1949, in August, they opened a state lab here in Fairbanks. And, of course, being curious about it, I went down and visited the open house. And there was a lady running the lab, and I met her. And I put in an application for a job in case there were other positions open. And then in 1950, in March, a few months later, Dr. Albrecht, who was then Commissioner of Health, knocked on my Wanigan door and asked me if I wanted to work running the state lab. It seems that the lady just didn't show up to work one day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. For some reason, she just automatically quit without telling anybody. So the good doctor hired me, and I went to work in the state lab in March of 1950.
Where was the lab located then?
The lab was located over 6th and Noble, and it was above what is now the comic shop. At that time, I believe there was a restaurant underneath. And Noble Street was then, of course, a dirt road. There was no air conditioning, so we had the windows open, and I'm amazed that I could grow bacteria in there without contaminating it, because dust was floating in and out all the time. But that was the way Fairbanks was. It was noted for its dust. I remember we had a visitor from Norway, a public health man, and he was amazed that we put up with the dust, but that was the way Fairbanks was, and we didn't seem to mind it.
What exactly was this lab for? What was the point of it, and what did you do, actually?
Well, the lab, theoretically, was a public health lab, and which is concerned with the public health of the citizens of the country, which was the territory then. And so we were supposed to watch out for epidemics and test water, test milk that people drank and used. But at that time, there were no other labs in Fairbanks, except the hospital had a little laboratory under their stairs, And so what we did was all laboratory work in Fairbanks. We did work for all the clinics, the doctors, and so it was a complete laboratory, as a laboratory is. It wasn't just a public health lab. It was a hospital lab, a clinic lab, and so on. So it was a lot of experience.
Different than the way it is now, you did the lab work for everyone in this
yes,
area.
Yes, that was the way it was then. We were the only lab in town.
What were your working hours, and how much did you make back then?
Well, being the only one in the lab, I did have a helper who washed the dishes and sterilized my media for me, but I had to do most of the work. And as his laboratory is, like a farm, the bacteria grow, and so you have to check every day. So it was a 7-day-a-week job, and there were no vacations, because even on your vacations you'd have to come up the lab and check stuff. I believe I got $420 a month at that time.
That was pretty good then, huh? I don't know.
Too bad, but it was a tough battle to fight to live on it.
It was difficult then.
Yes.
Oh, I see. Now, what at that time, what were the health problems of the day? What diseases or problems was the community of Fairbanks and the interior worried about and looking for?
Well, of course, we had all the usual problems that the states had. But Alaska was, the big problem in Alaska at that time was probably tuberculosis. We had a tremendous amount of tuberculosis. The sanitarium was full, and some people went outside the sanitariums. It was a tremendous problem. I do just thousands of TB cultures, and 50% of them would be positive cultures. But now it's conquered. And we had a polio epidemic, I remember. And we had a diphtheria, and we had a salmonella, and we had shigella. We had the usual old diseases that everybody had, measles, mumps, whooping cough, shortchanged.
Huh. Aside from that, I know you also were the man that was responsible for testing water for local residents and businesses. You told me a story yesterday. Would you tell that again?
Oh, that old story. Yeah, of course, we tested the milk. And also one of the jobs, we tested milk and water for the Army. They always brought their samples in. So I had lots of milk and ice cream to eat and drink after the tests were done. We tested the water. To FHA a house, you had to have a decent well. And so in those days, things were pretty callous. So we'd have the owner of the house who was trying to sell it or get it on FHA to bring his water sample in. And I remember one case where a gentleman brought a water sample in from a house, and it flunked the test. So he brought another one in the next day, and it flunked the test. So he asked me if I liked whiskey. And I said, well, not too much, and I wasn't going to take any bribes. And he had it up to a case of whiskey, but I kept telling him, bring in a good sample of water. And this one day he's sitting there, and I think he had it up to 2 cases of whiskey, and I said, just bring in a good sample of water. And his eyes lit up, and he grabbed his bottle, and he was gone 2 minutes, and he brought back a sample, which was a good sample of water. He perhaps got it downstairs at the fountain in the state building. So I mentioned that to the sanitarians, and from then on, the sanitarians picked the water sample up, not the individual trying to sell the house. That was Fairbanks in the old days.
I love that story. Also, now the city, what was the city water system? And you mentioned something about the chlorinated water at the Model Cafe. Tell me the story about that.
Well, the NC just about ran everything in those days. They had the power plant, and they did supply water downtown, the Model Hotel, Model Cafe, and so on. And the water samples weren't too good there, because they were too close to the Chena River, I believe. And so the chlorine was pretty high. I remember going into the cafe there, and you could smell the chlorine when you were drinking your water. And I remember the man that ran the water plant would bring samples of water into the lab just about every day, and they were usually bad, until finally he got a good one. He'd tear up all the bad slips and put the good slip on his wall down there for people to see. But it was safe water because it was chlorinated so much. The water he was bringing in was the raw water. But it was, I knew when he first bring one in every month that I was going to get five or six before he got a good one.
Why was the water bad because it was so near the river? What was the deal on that?
Well, they told me that they ran the power plant there. They had a steam plant, and of course, if you have a steam plant, you like to have as soft a water, as good a water as you can get. And river water is much better than the local well water in this town because this town had lots of rust in its water. So they told me that they dug a tunnel out onto the Chena River, put some dynamite out there, then filled the tunnel up with rocks and blew the bottom of the river out so the river water would run back under the NC company through those rocks. And they used that river water for their steam. Well, that brought the Chena River water fairly close to the well. So I always assumed that if that story is true, that is why the water in that well was never too good.
And at the time, the Chena was used kind of as a...
Oh, yes, the Chena was the sewer line for Ladd Field, Fairbanks. All houses along the way had dumped their sewerage into the Chena. I can remember later when they started to clean it up, some of the sanitariums went way up the Chena River, all way up where the Chena Hot Spring Road is now, and they took samples all the way down the Chena to the Tananaw, and you could spot the bacterial count would go up and go down, and where it went up, they'd go up and find a house was dumping sewage into the river. It was a good scientific way of catching the culprits.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm going to advance just a handful of years, a few years here, to the point at which Dr. Raymond Evans comes into the story. Now it's your turn. And tell me, how in the world did you happen to come up to Fairbanks?
Well, I was out in Liberia, West Africa. And I knew Dr. Scheibel.
Frank Scheibel?
Prior to going to Liberia. And we corresponded. And I promised him I would come up here when my tour duty was finished out there. Actually, through his getting back late to Fairbanks in 1958, I did not receive notice from him, but I was ready to depart in 1958 for this country, but... He was delinquent a wee bit of about 3 days in getting back to Fairbanks. He was on vacation outside. That's how I arrived here. I came from West Africa.
Huh. And what year and month was that?
And that was in 1961, March 1961.
Now, did you jump right into work, and how
oh,
did
yes,
you...
Oh, so yes. I got off the airplane at 4 o'clock, and I think at 6:30 we were in the operating room, and I was helping Dr. Shaver. We did a cesarean section that first night.
Oh, my word. Hours after you arrived here. Well, it sounded like there maybe was a shortage. What, did we need more doctors here at the time?
Oh, there was no shortage at that time. There was... 7 or 8 doctors in town, but everybody worked long hours. I suppose the average physician put in anywhere from 10 to 12 hours a day, every day. So, but there was no shortage. Nobody went without being able to see a doctor.
Uh-huh. At what point did you meet Jim Savage?
Well, it was pretty early on when I came to Fairbanks because I had dealt with typhoid fever, smallpox, and malaria out in Africa. And I often said when I was out there that what the emerging third nations needed in Africa and places like that was a good public health department. Curative medicine was a luxury they could ill afford. because the when you see cholera run rampant or smallpox or typhoid, it devastates the entire population. People are lying all over the street dead, and they're unable to cart away the bodies. And it's a bad situation. And only broad public health measures will do away with that. So Jim and I met real early on, and he was fascinated because he'd been in this man came in town, and he told us what we had to do, and we formed a committee, and Dr. William Wood was elected chairman of the committee, and the committee followed the program laid out by the Lutherans in collecting money, pledges it was. And even though we had all been devastated by the flood, a lot of us pledged beyond our means at the time in order to get the hospital going. And from there, it went on to we got the money, we got the architect, and the committee used to meet every Friday morning, I think it was, at 7 a.m. in the Traveler's Inn. You had to be there or miss out on all the activity. And the hospital, we were always plagued by the lack of money. And I do remember Red Porter and I, and Terry Miller, he was head of the Senate at that time, and you want me to cut off?
No, we'll wind it up. We'll take a break here in just a moment and come back in just a minute.
Red Porter and I and Terry Miller and Gene Guest, who was the head of the House of Representatives, and the Mike Bradner. We all sat in Gene Guest's office and wrote a bill giving Fairbanks the state to participate in this hospital building here to the extent of 25%, 25% local and 50% federal government. Well, Terry Miller at that time and told me to come back, told Red and I to come back to Fairbanks and not say a word about this bill, and that he didn't want to have to use it as trading stock in his close the legislative session. So not much was known about that, but that is how the 25% state participation came into being. And in addition to that, we had to go down there, and I think it was in around Thanksgiving in 72. We were a couple pavements behind in PK, so Red and I took off for the state legislature halls, and we had an appointment with Governor Egan, and Governor Egan, somehow or the other, he called Eric Warford in and his attorney general, and we got money again from the state that, by law, we were promised.
Okay, we'll be back in a moment. When Roy Larson started Larson's Jewelers on that day back in 1946, he had big dreams of what he'd like his business to become. Over the years, some of those dreams changed and others came true. Today, Larson's is still a family-owned business and one of the finest and most complete jewelry stores in the interior. Almost 40 years of skill and experience go into everything they do. Like Fairbanks, they've grown, but they're still your friend and neighbor. Larson's, fine jeweler since 1946 at 405 Noble.
He's waiting for you.
Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by Interior Signs, long established as one of the interior's most professional, most dependable year-round sign makers. They're licensed, insured, and always ready to serve Fairbanks with signs of every kind. Signs for business, contracting, or creative design. So for signs that stand the test of time, call Interior Signs at 479-3859. That's 479-3859. Interior Signs at 2405 South Cushman.
Improper foundation alignment can cause serious problems with an entire structure. Problems that may disturb or even totally disrupt normal functioning of that structure. Thus, chiropractic endorses the importance of spinal integrity combined with a personal commitment to physical fitness to help each individual achieve their maximum potential for good health and proper bodily functioning. For information on how chiropractic can help you, see Dr. Carol Davis of the Denali Chiropractic Clinic, 3525 College Road, phone 479-0485.
Welcome back to Meet a Pioneer. We're discussing the evolution of the health field in Fairbanks, starting from the 40s and bringing us up to closer to the present. We discussed earlier in my discussion with Dr. Raymond Evans and Mr. Jim Savage that in the earlier days, you mentioned salmonella, diphtheria, typhoid, polio as being the major health problems at the time. As those things, you say, they got cured or there was not a public problem as much, what in the later years, what in the more current years are the health problems and major social problems or social medicine? Jim?
Oh. Well, the later years, I've been retired for about 8 or 9 years now. Virus has come up, and of course you've heard very much on the news media about AIDS and most of these new genetic diseases, virus, because we're getting into things that aren't so common. And, then of course there's the radioactive problem. There's just so many things coming now that we look back on measles, mumps, whooping cough, and typhoid as ancient and honorable diseases.
Huh. Well, when you went to work, you were alone. You were the only one there. What's the difference between working that way and the way things are now?
Well, now, of course, Alaska has a little more money than it had when I worked. And so when I left the lab, I had, I believe, 12 people in the lab. When I started, I had 2.5, if you can count half-time time as half. And now they have computers, and they have so many new tests. The field is so fast-moving that I'm not sure I could handle the job. But if I went back now without keeping up with the subjects, I still get journals and read them, but it's a fast-moving field.
How about Fairbanks? Let's kind of change the subject just a little bit. What's the difference between the personality of the town now and then? You've seen quite a change in population and atmosphere. How would you analyze that?
Well, in the old days, you knew everybody. You went downtown, and it was rare that you'd see a stranger, and if you did, you'd ask everybody, well, who's this character? What's he doing here? Now you go downtown, and it's rare that you see somebody you know. It's just the opposite. I remember when I walked to work, of course, all the time, and it would take me half an hour some days to get to work because everybody would be out there waiting to tell me a story or ask me a question or something. It was just a family, the whole town. Now it's a city, Anchorage.
You didn't need a car in those days, huh?
Oh, no. You only went down around town, and you'd like to get out of town in the summertime, but... they moved my lab. First I was on Noble Street, then I was on 6th Avenue in the Hall Building, then I was in the State Building. So every time they moved the lab, they'd move it nearer my house.
Oh, my goodness. On 8th Avenue.
Yes.
Oh, gee. And you have, how many children did you and your wife have?
We had 6 children.
Huh. Dr. Evans, there's some new things that we hear about in the news a lot nowadays that have to do with health. It's in the health field, and it's also social problems. And people ask the question, was it always there before, or is this just something new? In your experience, how would you answer that?
Well, I think, Gail, that you're talking about child molesting, and I think you're talking about homosexuality, things that weren't breathed out loud in polite company in the days gone by. Nevertheless, they existed, and I have seen from the hills of Georgia to the savannas of Liberia and Fairbanks and all around here such things as incest, child molestation, such as children 2, 2.5 years of age and up. I've seen child abuse. I've seen 2-week-old babies, both femurs broke.
Are you saying this was years and years ago?
Yes, this is years ago.
So it's a situation.
And I've seen all kind of child brutality from crying infant stage on up through to the, actually in high school. Mm-hmm. So it is not those people who today are skeptical of some of this news that's coming forth. It's like all these things have come out of the closet. Somebody opened the door and allowed the light to illuminate the corners.
So these are the situations that did exist in the past and are. And so the skepticism, what we've learned is that these are, it is not necessarily a new thing. I'm going to take one more break here and we'll be back in just a moment.
Alaskans have always been famous for their hospitality, the same wonderful hospitality you still find at the Two Rivers Lodge, where Don and Stasha Troutman offer the best menu and interior, a comfortable, quiet atmosphere, and that famous Alaskan welcome to the people who are today's history makers. If you've been meaning to try one of the most talked-about dining experiences in the Alaskan interior, don't wait any longer. Go out tonight to the Two Rivers Lodge, 16-mile Chena Hot Springs Road.
Alaska is still a land of pioneers, like the Binkley family, who for three generations have operated riverboats in the state of Alaska.
Running the riverboat Discovery has given our family the opportunity to show so many others just a little corner of the Alaska we love. That's also one of the reasons we're proud to be a sponsor of Meet a Pioneer. This program gives us all a chance to find out more about the fascinating history of this special place we call Alaska, and we look forward to each week's program. We're looking forward to seeing you again next summer aboard the riverboat Discovery.
Well, we have just about 2 minutes left, and I'd like to say thank you to my guests this morning, Dr. Raymond Evans and Mr. James Savage. And we've covered a little bit of the history of the evolution of the health field in the interior and the Fairbanks area. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for being here this morning. Anything finally you'd like to add, Jim?
Well, thank you, Gail. I'm honored to be on a pioneer program, although I don't feel like a pioneer. I know so many people who were here years before I still feel like a cheechaka. But thank you.
Sure.
Well, again, I would like to say I'm honored to have been asked to participate in this meeting with Jim and all. And I do want to say one other thing to all the people that really brought the health care to Fairbanks when they built a hospital. All those people who participated in donating their time, donation of money, and all that. I do think North Star Burr owes a debt of gratitude to everybody who participated in that hospital. I don't know of anything else that is pertinent at the moment.
Well, thank you very much.
I say thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen, very much. It's been a pleasure to have you here. A taped version of this interview is going to become a part of the permanent oral history collection at the University of Alaska in the Alaskan Polar Regions Department. This program was produced by Gail Malloy. And a thanks to our sponsors who make this program possible, the Two Rivers Lodge, the Riverboat Discovery, Sophie Station, the Denali Chiropractic Clinic, the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, Interior Signs, and Larson's Jewelers. Thank you. Radio for the interior of Alaska, this is KFAR Fairbanks. It's 10 o'clock.
From ABC News, I'm Kate Thornton. President Reagan's off whistle-stopping through Ohio on the...